Welcome to the Shir Targumim, Parshas Yisro. Perek Yutes, started speaking about yesterday, the Torah describes the events leading up to Matan Torah. And there in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Zayin, we're told, Vayotze Moshe Sa'om Likraso Elokim in Amachaneh. Moshe Rabbeinu took the people out of the camp to greet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, right? In other words, to experience Matan Torah. And the people stood at the tachtis of the mountain. What's the tachtis of the mountain? So the Targum Onkelos translates, is atadu, they stood, b'shipulei Torah. They stood at the base of the mountain, which is the simple pshat. They all gathered around the mountain. They stood at the base. But we also know that Chazal famously explained that the word tachtis over here can be related to the word tachas, underneath. Not simply that they stood at the foot of the mountain, but they stood underneath the mountain. And as Rashi quotes it, l'fi pshuto b'raglei ha'har, the simple pshat is that they stood at the base of the mountain, the foot of the mountain. Umidrasho, but the midrashic interpretation, shenitlashahar b'makomo, the mountain was uprooted from its place, v'nichfa aleim kegigis, and it was held over them like a barrel, like an upside down barrel on top of the people. So in other words, the people were not at the foot of the mountain, they were literally underneath the mountain. Rashi doesn't quote this Maimer Chazal in its entirety, the statement of Chazal in its entirety, but it's a famous Gemara on Shabbos, Peches, and we're probably familiar with the continuation of the Gemara. After the Gemara describes how the Pasuk, Vayisyatzu Besachti Sahar, they stood underneath the mountain, means that the Ribbono Shel Olam uprooted the mountain, suspended it over their heads, and they were underneath it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, says the Gemara on Shabbos, Im ata mekablim haTorah mutav, if you're going to accept the Torah, fine and good. V'im lav sham tekvu raschem, if you're not going to accept the Torah, so I'm going to let go, and you'll be buried, you know, right here underneath the mountain, right? So the Jewish people, you know, they looked up, they looked down, they looked up, they looked down. They said, okay, where do we sign? You know, we'll take the Torah. Right? Very famous Maimer Chazal. And of course, we know there's a lot of discussion that then flows from that statement in Chazal. So what are you saying? You're saying the Jewish people accepted the Torah under duress. You know, they were forced into it. First of all, what's the morality of that? You know, how can you force the Jewish people to accept the Torah? How does that fit together with the other famous statement on that very same page of the Gemara that Klal Yisrael said Nasa v'Nishma, right? That they were willing to accept the Torah even before they knew what was written inside the Torah. Those two statements seem to be contradictory to one another. So a lot of discussion about trying to understand that. But it's interesting to note that when Rashi quotes this Gemara, and indeed the basis for this Gemara in the Pasuk, Rashi focuses only on the fact that the mountain was suspended over their heads. He does not quote the latter half of the Gemara, where the Ribbono Shel Olam tells the Jewish people, the reason I'm suspending the mountain over your heads is basically to force you into accepting the Torah. That part is not quoted in Rashi. So you say, okay, so Rashi didn't quote the whole statement of Chazal. It was just referencing it. He didn't have to go through the whole story. But I think it's interesting to note that if one looks at the Yonasan ben Uziel's translation over here of the Pasuk, he also references this idea that the mountain was picked up and suspended over the Jewish people's heads. But it's perhaps possible to suggest within the Yonasan ben Uziel that although he's basically working with the idea of the Gemara, he may be coming at it from a slightly different angle. Here, the Yonasan ben Uziel writes as follows. Va'anpek Moshe yas amol kadamos shchinto d'Hashem min mashrisa. Moshe Rabbeinu took the people out of the camp to receive the Shechina, the divine presence. Umiyad, and right away, Tlash Morei Olma Yas Tavra, the Ribbono Shel Olam uprooted the mountain, V'zakfei Ba'avira, and he set it up straight, he suspended it in the air, And the mountain became translucent like glass. The mountain was transformed. There were two miracles that took place. The mountain was uprooted and suspended in midair, and the mountain also became like a mirror. It became like glass. This ataru to Jose Tavra. And the people stood underneath the mountain. Here, too, there are, I think, two things that are striking in this translation of the Yonasan ben Uziel. First of all, he introduces this idea that the mountain was transformed into glass, which does not seem to be based on any phrase in the Pasuk at all. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a phrase in the Pasuk that mentions the idea of the mountain becoming glass, and we have to figure out what's the significance of that, where did that come from. That idea is also not mentioned in the Gemara, Shabbos Peiches. It's also noteworthy how the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel as well does not indicate at all that the Ribbono Shel Olam used the suspended mountain as a threat against the Jewish people. Right? So you'll say, so on one level, that's easily understandable. There's nothing in the Pasuk that indicates that the Ribbono Shel Olam was threatening the Jewish people with the suspended mountain. The only thing that you see in the Pasuk is possibly the idea that the Jewish people were underneath the mountain. They were standing underneath the mountain. Why were they standing underneath the mountain? I don't know. They were standing underneath the mountain. The Ribbono Shel Olam chose to uproot the mountain and suspend it over their heads. So you'll say, okay, so the Yonasan ben Uziel is just translating what it says in the Pasuk. But we know that the whole approach of the Yonasan ben Uziel is not simply to translate the Pasuk. He very often adds ideas for the Midrashim that have no direct textual basis in the Pasuk whatsoever. Again, case in point, in this very Pasuk, he adds the idea, which is not rooted in the simple pshat in the Pasuk at all, that the mountain turned to glass, right? So, if you're already adding that, it wouldn't be so hard for the Yonasan ben Uziel to add the end of the story as described by the Gemara in Shabbos. He uprooted the mountain, he suspended over the Jewish people's heads, they stood underneath the mountain, and the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you know, you have a choice. Either you take the Torah, or I let go. Yonasan ben Uziel does not quote that at all. Doesn't make it into the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. I thought that perhaps one could suggest, I'm not sure, but perhaps one could suggest that although the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is somewhat similar to the Gemara, insofar as they both agree that Vayisyatzu b'sachti sahar means that the mountain was suspended over the heads of the Jewish people, they differ, the Yonasan ben Uziel and the Gemara part ways on how to interpret the reason that the Ribbono Shel Olam suspended the mountain over the Jewish people. And the Gemara in Shabbos, so again, as we know, as famously, the Ribbono Shel Olam is using the suspended mountain as a threat. Either you take the Torah or I drop it. Perhaps according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, the suspended mountain is not a threat, but rather a source of protection. Again, remember what's going on over there. Vayhi kolos uvrakim. There's thunder, there's lightning, there's all kinds of scary stuff that's going on as the Jewish people are about to receive the Torah. Perhaps this was a kind of protection. Again, they didn't really need the protection because the Ribbono Shel Olam certainly wasn't going to hurt them during the process of Matan Torah. But it was a reassurance to the Jewish people that they would be safe and secure despite the fact that everything going on around them was quite frightening. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, turned the mountain to glass. If the point of suspending the mountain over the heads of the Jewish people is simply to threaten them, you know, if you don't accept the Torah, I'm going to drop it, what do I care whether it's made out of glass? I mean, it would probably be more effective as a threat if the mountain stayed a mountain. You know, if a mountain drops on top of you, it's a lot worse than having a thing of glass drop on top of you, although neither of them obviously is all that desirable. But the mountain turned to glass so that the Jewish people would have front row seats, so to speak, at the sound and light show that was happening at Har Sinai, and yet at the same time they would feel protected that nothing that was going on was going to hurt them in any way. This was actually suspending the mountain over their heads was actually a sign from the Ribbono Shel Olam that he was protecting and enveloping and sheltering the Jewish people while they were experiencing Matan Torah. That's why The pasuk just simply says v'satadu tuchosei tavra, according to the Targum Yonasan and Uziel. They stood underneath the mountain. They didn't stand underneath the mountain trembling, oh my gosh, he's going to drop the mountain on us. They stood underneath the mountain feeling protected throughout this entire experience of Matan Torah. Again, I'm not sure 100% you can say that within the Yonasan and Uziel, but certainly I think it's striking how he doesn't bring the end of the statement of Chazal the way we have it in the Gemara and Shabbos. Anyway, so the Sukkim continue. Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yutes. Vahi kol ha-shofar holech v'chazek me'od. The sound of the shofar was gradually getting stronger and stronger. Moshe yedaber v'elokim yanenu v'kol. Moshe would speak, and the Ribbono Shel Olam would respond to him in a voice. That's the literal translation of the Pasuk. So, of course, the literal translation of the Pasuk is just hard to understand. What does that mean? Moshe would speak, and the Ribbono Shel Olam would respond to Moshe Rabbeinu, Bekol, with a voice. What do you mean he would respond with a voice, as opposed to what? So, the Rishonim already talk about different ways to understand this phrase, but the Yonasan ben Uziel gives the following interpretation. Moshe havo memalel, Moshe would speak, Umin kodem Hashem have misane bekol ne'im umeshabach une'im tochalya. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to Moshe Rabbeinu with a pleasant and praiseworthy voice and in a sweet kind of fashion. In other words, V'elokim yanenu v'kol is a description of the Ribbono Shel Olam's manner of speaking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke in a manner that was pleasing and engaging, right? This somewhat fits in with what we just wanted to portray a moment ago, what we were suggesting in the Yonasan ben Uziel, that the suspension of the mountain over the heads of the Jewish people, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, is not a threatening move, but rather it's a move that speaks of the protective nature that the Ribbono Shel Olam is extending to the Jewish people. It speaks of the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for the Jewish people. And this just follows up two psukim later. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, if there are kolos of rakim, if there's thunder and lightning going on, so you'd expect the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be also loud and threatening and, you know, authoritarian and overwhelming and all of that. No. You know, kol ne'im u'meshabach ne'im tochalya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks in a pleasant and sweet voice. The whole experience, again, was obviously overwhelming. The whole experience was, something we can only begin to imagine. I mean, if we think back far enough, we could hopefully remember it, right? But, it's certainly an overwhelming experience. But it was meant to be a pleasant experience at the same time. The Ribbono Shel Olam didn't want the Jewish people, you know, simply trembling at Har Sinai, although they certainly did. That's what the Pasuk says. He wanted the experience of encountering the Ribbono Shel Olam to be something that was pleasant. So even the manner, the voice in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to address the Jewish people, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, followed in that way. We should just point out that, just to go back to a moment to what we mentioned, the idea of the mountain being suspended over the Jewish people, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, being something protective as opposed to something threatening. So, you know, once you understand in that way, the whole, all of the questions that are asked by the Rishonim, how do you reconcile Kaf Aleim Har Kegigis with Nasa V'Nishma? How do you reconcile the mountain being suspended over the heads of the Jewish people and they're being forced into accepting the Torah? How do you reconcile that with Chazal's statement that they accepted it willingly? So all those questions fall away once you have the Yonasan ben Uziel's interpretation of the suspension of the mountain. The suspension of the mountain isn't forcing anyone into anything, right? It's merely protecting the Jewish people as part of the loving acceptance of Torah, which the Jewish people are experiencing. Again, obviously, the Gemara still says what the Gemara says. You still have to reconcile the Gemaras within one another, but at least within the Yonasan ben Uziel, you don't have that same question. Yeah.
Rabbi, so this Gemara that says that the Jewish people are from the mountain, so you take the Torah, yes, otherwise I'll let you out. Right now?
That's the Gemara in Shabbos.
But that can be reconciled with Nasa V'Nishma.
Yeah. So there's so there's a lot of literature trying to reconcile it. But according to Yonasan ben Uziel, you don't have the question.
Right.
That's the point. You know the question according to the Yonah Sender
Nazil.
Okay. Rav, the way the Yonah Sender Nazil understands a call that it's sought and love.
Right.
I don't know if it's interesting because usually I've thought of call as call Hashem. It is call Hashem shamati bagan vayira. It was like something to be fearful of a call.
Right.
This is an interesting.
Right. So I guess they're different kolos. Right. In other words, not every call is local call shavela call. Not every. Right. In other words, you have different. The Ribbono Shalom Kaviyachol has different voices as well. So in other words, this voice was this sound. Whatever he emitted was a pleasant, an inviting kind of voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, there are different ways to understand the idea of a call, right, 100%. So, at the very end of the Perek Yutes, we find, Vayered Moshe El Ha'om, right, Moshe goes down from Har Sinai, he greets the people, Vayomer Aleihem, and he said to them what? Right, the end of the Perek leaves you dangling. Moshe comes down from Har Sinai, and he said to them, and the very next pasuk we have is the beginning of Parakhov. Vaidaber Elokim is called Advarmo Elalemor. Hashem said all of these things, saying, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces the Aseres HaDibros. So, you're left dangling at the end of Perek Yutes. Vayered Moshe Elohim Vayomer Aleim. Moshe came down to the people and he said to them, okay, next chapter. What did he say? So Rashi writes, Vayomer Aleim Hasra Azo. He told them the warning that is in the previous pasuk, pasuk Chavdal. It says, "Vayomer Elav Hashem, lech raid. You should go down. Va'kohanim v'ha'am al yerusu lalos el Hashem pen yifrotz bom. Tell everybody to stay down on the mountain at the foot of the mountain, and not try to ascend the mountain. Right? Stay back. So vayered Moshe Elam vayomer aleihem. Moshe comes down to the people and he says to them, stay back. Right? That's how Rashi interprets." The Pasuk, the Rashbam, interprets similarly. But once again, in the Yonasan ben Uziel, we have a beautiful, unique way of interpreting these last two words right before we get into the Aseres HaDibros themselves. Unachas Moshe min Tavro levas amo. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain to greet the people, v'amar lahon, and he said to them, Krovu, come close. Isn't this fascinating? Rashi says Moshe tells them, stay back, right? According to the Yonah Sanbenu Uziel, Moshe tells them, come close. Not come close, go up the mountain, but, come close. If you ever teach, right, when you walk into a classroom and everyone isn't assigned a seat, everybody sits in the back row, right? So the first thing you have to say as a teacher is, you're allowed to come up to the front row or even to the second row or something like that. So he comes to them, he tells them, Krovu, come close. Kabilu oraisa imasarte dibrayo. Come accept the Torah through the Aseres HaDibros, through the Ten Commandments. So Vayomer Aleihem is Moshe Rabbeinu telling the people, come here, we're about to receive the Torah. Right? So everything is, it's consistent with the Yonasan ben Uziel's portrayal of what's happening at Matan Torah. It's a very friendly kind of experience. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't suddenly, have this booming voice that comes out of the darkness. He first sends Moshe Rabbeinu down to the people, and Moshe says, Rabosai, come close, we're about to experience something. He gives them a little bit of a heads up so that they're not entirely overwhelmed when the process of the Ribbono Shel Olam giving the Torah commences. Now again, Chazal tell us, with all of that, they were still overwhelmed. Right? Chazal described how parcha nishmasam, their nishamas flew out of their bodies and back. Interestingly, the Yonasan ben Uziel does not record that Maimer Chazal. So again, he may have been coming from a different perspective, but all of this in general, the Ribbono Shel Olam through Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to make the experience of Matan Torah as pleasant and as inviting as possible, notwithstanding the fact that obviously this was an overwhelming kind of experience.
I was going to say pretty much to an extent what you said at the end, but they kind of stopped because all the people were dying. So Moshe ended up telling the Jews, not Hashem. So how did everybody came with a nice, pleasant voice? Why would Moshe have to finish up?
So I'll give you a muscle, right? Okay. So you go to the doctor. Dr. Wolfish left already. You go to the doctor, and he sits with you, and the nurse takes out a big syringe, and the doctor says to you, "Don't worry, this isn't going to hurt you one bit." And it still hurts. The doctor's supposed to have a bedside manner, you know? I mean, the doctor isn't supposed to say, I guess they don't teach you to say in medical school, "Don't worry, this is going to make you feel lousy and you're going to jump through the ceiling." That's not going to be helpful to anybody, right? The doctor does his best to calm you down, but, you know, in the end of the day, it is an overwhelming experience, right? So, yes, it's an overwhelming experience to come face-to-face with the Ribono Shel Olam, and that has an impact on the people there. But nonetheless, you know, the Ribono Shel Olam and Moshe Rabbeinu are doing their utmost, each in his own way, you know, to soften the experience as much as possible. But again, you can't take away the fact that it's an overwhelming experience.
I just remembered something that goes on my mind. When did Hashem appear in a form that was more, that more was went by the Mediterranean, by
Kriyas Yamsa,
or by Matan Torah.
Matan Torah is still on a higher level. It's unusual experience.
Because it's in Masha Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah. But Im Kol Zeh, Matan Torah is Matan Torah.
How does that work with the times that it seems like human characteristics, speaking language, characteristics,
birth, and so. Right, so we're quoting now is the Yonos of Menuzio. So he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have that same inclination to try to stay away from human-like descriptions of the Ribono Shel Olam at all. But again, if you look consistently throughout the Yonos of Menuzio, he does try, even here, to minimize any statements in the Torah that describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in somewhat human terms. He doesn't always do it, which is why the Ramban claims that what the Rambam says, that the Yonos, that Targum Onkelos is always trying to avoid those things, is incorrect. But he often tries to avoid some of those things. There's a very moving description that repeats itself a few times in the Yonos of Menuzio over here by each of the Aseres HaDibros about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicated the Dibros to Klal Yisrael. Right? We'll read the first time this appears in Perek Chav, Pasuk Beis, but we should know that this basic terminology is repeated by the Yonos of Menuzio every time a new dibra is introduced by the Torah. So, pasuk Parachav pasuk Beis is again a famous pasuk. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzeisicha Meretz Mitzrayim Beis Avodim, the first of the Ten Commandments. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt from the house of slavery. Right, it's the Yonos of Menuzio. And again, much of this is not a translation; it's an elaboration on the words in the Torah themselves. Dibera Kadma'a, the first dibra, right? The first of the Ten Commandments. Kadhava Nafik Mimpum Kudsha, when the words came out of the mouth of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Yehi Shmei Mavarach, may His name be blessed. Hey Kizikin, Hey Kibarkin, Vehei Kishalhovian Dinur. The words came out of the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, you see, he's not avoiding any human-like descriptions of Hashem. When the words came out of the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were like comets, they were like lightning, and they were like tongues of fire. Lampa dinur min yamine, v'lampa di'isho min smale. A tongue of fire from his right and a tongue of fire from his left. So when these words came out of the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu like streams of fire, Parach v'tayis ba'avir shmaya. The words were tangible. The words flew in the midst of the air. V'chazar mischamei amashu yason de Yisrael. And then the words themselves in this fiery form, I guess the fire spelled out the words of the first Dibra. The words came back and they were visible by the entire Jewish camp. V'chazar umischakek aluche kiyama dahava yehivan b'kaf yadoi de Moshe. And then the words, in this fiery form which appeared over the Jewish camp, went back to the two tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu was holding, and the fiery words engraved themselves upon the luchos. Umischapech behon min star l'star. And as Chazal say in the Gemara and Shabbos, they engraved themselves in such a way upon the luchos that whether you turn the luchos forward or backwards, you could read the words. Again, something miraculous. Obviously, if you and I engrave something on stone, so when you turn it around, you know, you look at it from the back, you see the mirror image. But the words of the Dibros were engraved upon the stone in a miraculous fashion, so whichever way you turned it, you know, it read properly. Uvechein Savach v'Omar, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu cried out, and he said, Ami b'nei Yisrael, O my nation, b'nei Yisrael, Anohu Hashem Elokachon, I am Hashem your God, Tiprakis v'apekis yoschon prikin, I redeemed you, and I took you out redeemed, min aro de Mitzroi, mibes shibur avdayo, from the land of the Egyptians, from the house, from the place where you were enslaved. It's a beautiful description, very, very colorful description. And I think, again, it fits with the same idea that we're developing, that according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, as much as possible, the Ribbono Shel Olam was trying to make the experience of Matan Torah an experience of love and affection for the Jewish people, as opposed to being a scary and overwhelming experience for the Jewish people. Ami b'nei Yisrael. I mean, again, obviously there's stuff that's very overwhelming over here. You're standing there, you see this fire going back and forth over the camp, spelling out words, hitting the luchos, you know, spelling out words on the luchos. I mean, it's a very overwhelming, very frightening experience. We understand a little bit more why the mountain perhaps was suspended over them in this translucent mountain. I mean, if you're watching, you know, lightning go back and forth in the sky, you know, and like comets going back and forth in the sky, it's a scary experience, you know, so they prefer to watch that from the other side of the plexiglass, you know, where they are underneath the mountain. But it's an incredibly loving way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam addresses the Jewish people. Ami b'nei Yisrael, not just impersonally, I'm Hashem. My nation, oh Jewish people, my nation, oh children of Yisrael. There's tremendous chavivos, there's tremendous affection in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu addresses the Jewish people, according to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. And again, this is not just by Anochi Hashem Elokecha, by each of the Dibros. If you look at the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, this whole story is told over again about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the fire back ricocheting back and forth in the sky, hitting the luchos, calling out to the Jewish people with these terms of endearment, Ami b'nei Yisrael. Again, it reinforces the idea, the love with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was addressed in Klal Yisrael by Matan Torah. Here, Rav Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rav Sa HaKadosh Baruch